looking to get a outreach summary on the insurance. I give the floor to Roberta.
So at this meeting today, we are providing you with a summary of the feedback from outreach on the proposed amendments to IFRS 17 that were published in June. So you will recall that the exposure draft comprised a package of targeted and narrow scope amendments to IFRS 17 that were designed to ease its implementation without weakening the standard or unduly disrupting implementation. So the exposure draft was open for comments for 90 days until the end of September. We have received 121 comment letters. It is important to note that the feedback that we are discussing today is from the outreach that we have undertook during the comment period. It is not the feedback from the comment letters. We plan to bring the summary of the feedback from the comment letters to the November board meeting, together with our recommended plan for redeliberations. So this plan will list the topics that we think the board should rediscuss in the light of the feedback on the exposure draft from both outreach and comment letters. We are still in the process of analyzing the comment letters, but I would say that the feedback from comment letters is consistent with the feedback from outreach, which is summarized in Agenda Paper 2A for this meeting today. The comment letters typically provide more details about some comments that were raised during the meetings that we held during the comment period. So the comment letter analysis will form a better base for the redeliberation plan. At this meeting today, we are not requesting any technical decisions from the board. So we will present Agenda Paper 2A, and we will ask the board to share any initial thoughts on the feedback from the outreach. Moving to the PowerPoint presentation, the presentation includes two main parts. Firstly, an overview of the stakeholders that we met, and secondly, an overview of the feedback from those stakeholders by question included in the exposure draft, as well as other feedback. Starting with the stakeholders that we have talked to, these are listed from slide 8 to slide 14. In total, we held about 70 meetings in 14 jurisdictions. This is quite a lot for a narrow scope exposure draft, but we wanted to gather feedback as early as possible to identify any aspect that the board might need to rediscuss, considering the objective of this project, finalizing the amendments in mid-2020 and limiting disruption to implementation as much as possible. We attended four discussion forums in Hong Kong, Toronto, Sydney, and London. In connection with those forums, we attended other meetings with local insurers, regulators, auditors, and investors to discuss the proposals in the exposure draft. These meetings supplemented the regular dialogue that we have with some national standard setters who actually help us organizing some of the discussion forums. And during some meetings with regulators and investors, we also provided an update about IFRS 17 in general and the recent developments about the status of IFRS 17 implementation. We also met with preparers, auditors, actuaries, regulators, and standard setters based in China, Japan, South Africa, Germany, Italy, Spain, and the UK. And as noted in slide 14, we have also discussed the proposal in the exposure draft with international bodies representing a wide range of stakeholders, standard setters, regulators, actuaries, auditors, and users of financial statements. So before moving to the second part of the presentation, do you have any questions or comments on the meetings we held to gather feedback? That's not seems the case, so I would move to slide 16. This is the big picture about the feedback on the exposure draft. Overall, the feedback on the exposure draft is positive. Stakeholders welcome the work done by the board to support implementation by listening to the concern and challenges in practice and proposing some targeted amendment to IFRS 17. However, some stakeholders think that the board should extend the scope of some of the proposed amendments. I think that all acknowledge the direction of the amendment is generally right, but they think the board should have gone further. In addition, some stakeholders, particularly those based in Europe, continue to raise concerns and challenges that the board consider when developing the exposure draft and for which the board decided not to propose changes to IFRS 17 for the reason that are explained in the basis for conclusions on the exposure draft. I will now move to section 4 of the presentation that summarizes the feedback for each of the questions in the exposure draft. And at the end of each topic, I will pause to check if you have any comments on question, but you might also prefer to raise your comments at the end.
Mary.
I have a question. You may say that it's better to take it later, and that's fine. But at the end of slide 16, you say that the general feedback included some implementation challenges that those stakeholders had recently identified. Without getting into a long list, can you just give some sense of the nature of those and the level of their significance? I certainly had felt from the TRG discussions that, you know, the early TRG discussions had been much more with very big, very significant issues, and we'd started to move into more specific, granular, you know, issues at the TRG. Or, you know, what's the nature in terms of kind of that range, and is it?
I think that these are exactly the type of implementation question that could be submitted by the TRG. Actually, these were not identified before, so they were not included in the list of the 25 topics, but were identified only when companies progress with implementation. And I think that they are very jurisdiction-specific, so they are more similar to the TRG question that the TRG has received from September 2018 onwards, so they are more specific to contract and jurisdiction rather than relevant for a wide range of stakeholders. I think it's normal given that the companies are advancing in implementation and they look into the contract in more detail and they ask questions that they were not asking at the beginning of the implementation project.
And so some of them were more, I'm trying to put words in your mouth, tell me if these words are correct. Some of them might have been of the, am I understanding correctly that this is how you would marry up the requirements and the standard with this feature in a product or this type. So some of it is confirmatory and some of it might be identifying at that more granular level application issues or challenges with getting data. Okay.
I would then move to slide 18 and 19. So those slides summarize the feedback on the proposed scope exclusion for some credit cards and some loans that meet the definition of an insurance contract. Overall, the stakeholders welcome the proposed scope exclusion and agreed with the board view that those exclusions would help to reduce implementation costs. Credit cards and loans are contracts that are typically issued by banks. So on these, we heard feedback mainly from banks, as well as from auditors that typically have a cross-industry view. However, regarding the proposed scope exclusion for loans, we have also heard from insurers, particularly in the UK, who welcomed the proposal to apply either IFRS 17 or IFRS 9 to loans like the equity release mortgages. A couple of concerns were expressed about the proposal for credit cards, and this is noted in slide 18. First, some stakeholders were concerned that the reference to credit cards is too specific and suggested developing a principle-based scope exclusion for banking products that would also capture, for example, debit cards providing insurance coverage. And second, for credit cards meeting the definition of insurance contract that would be excluded from the scope of IFRS 17, the exposure draft proposed that an entity would apply IFRS 9 instead. So some stakeholders were concerned that credit cards with an insurance component might fail the SPPI test in IFRS 9 and therefore might need to be accounted for a fair value through profit or loss. Do you have any questions or comments on slide 18, 19?
Sure. Just to confirm my understanding, feedback on the credit cards. So when we say here that some were concerned that some credit cards would be measured at fair value through profit or loss, we mean specifically here the credit cards where the insurance is part of the contractual terms as opposed to in legislation?
Yeah, correct. Because I think for the SPPI test, if something is outside the contractual term, it's treated differently. Okay. Then slide 20. Slide 20 summarizes the feedback on the proposal to require an entity to allocate part of the insurance acquisition cash flows to related expected contract renewals, recognize those costs as an asset until the entity recognizes contract renewals, and assess the recoverability of the asset at each reporting date. I think that compared to the previous topic, the feedback here was more mixed. And many stakeholders supported the proposal, but some, particularly in Asia, think that this would add complexity. This is because the proposal to allocate part of the acquisition cost to contract renewals is a requirement, not an option. So entities that typically do not pay significant acquisition cost are concerned about having to think about the expected contract renewals, recognize an asset, and perform an impairment test if factor circumstances indicate that the asset might be impaired. They said this will increase their cost, but does not provide them with any significant benefit in terms of reducing the number of contracts that would be presented as onerous on initial recognition. Do you have any question or comment on slide 20?
Except that I understand this frustration.
Okay.
And we should never have taken that decision. To
okay. Slide 21. Slide 21 summarizes the feedback on the proposal that an entity is required to recognize the contractual service margin profit or loss as both the insurance coverage and any service relating to investment activities are provided over time. Currently, for the insurance contract accounted for applying the general model, IFRS 17 requires an entity to recognize the contractual service margin profit or loss as the insurance coverage is provided over time. Stakeholders generally agreed that services relating to investment activities should also be considered for the recognition of the contractual service margin in profit or loss, so the proposal is welcome. However, some stakeholders issuing specific insurance contracts in a limited number of jurisdictions think that the proposed criteria for when an investment return service can exist are too narrow. So those stakeholders think that there are more insurance contracts that provide investment return services compared to those that would be captured by the proposal in the exposure draft. And the comment letters actually provide more details about this type of contract. Do you have any question or comment on slide 21?
Sure.
I wasn't surprised by the feedback on slide 21 because I think we sort of knew that there were two views of the world before we went out with the proposals, not two equally split views of the world, but we at least knew there were two views of the world, whereas I was surprised when I went to Asia and got the feedback on the deferred acquisition cash flows. But I think what is interesting, and it comes out a little bit more in the comment letters, I think, to sort of augment what's here in the outreach feedback, is that some who don't agree with this extension of the contractual service margin attribution actually don't really necessarily agree with the granularity of some of the attribution that's already in existing IFRS 17 because of potential complexity. So it's not a response purely to this proposal from everybody.
Yeah, that's correct. Actually, probably this proposal raised the attention on other complexities that are already in IFRS 17 for contracts that provide multiple services. That is actually the point mentioned in slide 21. Slide 22 summarizes the feedback on the proposal to amend IFRS 17 so that an entity that recognizes losses on onerous contract on initial recognition would at the same time also recognize a gain on any reinsurance contract held, to the extent that the reinsurance contract held cover the claims of the insurance contract on a proportionate basis. In other words, a fixed percentage of claims will be recovered. And to the extent that the reinsurance contract held are entered into before or at the same time the onerous contract are issued. Most insurers said that this proposal is in the right direction, but they said that it would apply only to a small population of reinsurance contract. So they questioned whether it would be helpful to address the concern and challenges raised about the accounting mismatches that would arise when an entity recognizes losses on insurance contract at initial recognition and has a right to recover some of all those losses through reinsurance. On the other hand, some regulators and national standard setters noted that it is quite unusual in IFRS standards to recognize gains upfront or defer losses. So those stakeholders were worried that this proposal might be open to abuse. Do you have any question or comment on slide 22?
Yes, Mary.
Just on your last point about some who were concerned that it would be open to abuse, were they saying that they would rather have the problem that was identified initially that we were trying to address, or are they making suggestions about how to modify the approach we took to addressing the issue?
From the meeting that I remember, I think that they were raising the concern without proposing a solution. I mean, just expressed their view in saying, be careful because, I mean, entities might have an incentive just to buy reinsurance because of this change.
So they were more just expressing concern about this going beyond where we normally go to address potential issues in other areas, and wondering if we'd gone too far to try and address this one.
And just to build on that, so I heard that concern raised in a couple of meetings that I was at, and when I heard it, I don't know if this is true universally, but when I heard it, it was not coming from preparers, it was coming from other parties, and where I heard it in particular was from a sort of regulatory background, and one of the things that they raised was that if you look at least, you know, the regulation's different everywhere, but at least in some cases where regulatory relief is provided for reinsurance, you need a very close sort of fit between the insurance contract and the reinsurance contract and a high level of confidence that there's real economic relief and protection that's provided. And we don't have that sort of notion in IFRS 17 because we account for the insurance and the reinsurance quite separately. And so I think their concern would be that we'd have potentially more matching between insurance and reinsurance in circumstances where they wouldn't really think of it as providing true economic relief. And so for them to combine the accounting and to have upfront recognition of a gain and a deferral of a loss where they didn't see that strong economic relationship was introducing an area of risk. But I think that's partly just because we've got a different way of thinking about reinsurance than IFRS 17. But I think that was what was behind some of the concerns I heard, at least.
Move to slide 23. This slide summarizes the feedback on the proposal to simplify presentation on the balance sheet by requiring an entity to present insurance contract asset and insurance contract liabilities on the balance sheet using portfolios of insurance contract rather than groups of insurance contract. Most stakeholders agreed that this proposal would reduce implementation cost. However, a small number of stakeholders would prefer to present the insurance contract asset and insurance contract liabilities on the balance sheet at an entity level rather than at a portfolio level. This is, of course, a suggestion that the board has already considered when developing the exposure draft. Do you have any questions or comments on slide 23? Slide 24. Summarizes the feedback on the proposal to permit an entity to use the risk mitigation option when the entity uses a reinsurance contract held to mitigate financial risk of insurance contracts that are accounted for applying the variable fee approach. The option would permit an entity to reflect some or all of the changes in the effect of financial risk on the variable fee approach contract that usually adjusts the contractual service margin immediately in profit or loss to offset the change resulting from financial risk in a reinsurance contract held that is also recognized in profit or loss. So this would reduce accounting mismatches created by the variable fee approach. Variable fee approach contracts are not common in all jurisdictions, so this proposal was not relevant for all the stakeholders we talked to. Those who provide this feedback welcome the proposal. And as an additional comment, some stakeholders said that they would prefer that the board further extend the risk mitigation option. They thought that the option should apply to all financial instruments that are used for risk mitigation purposes that are accounted for at fair value to profit or loss. So not just to derivatives, but all to the financial instrument at fair value to profit or loss. Do you have any questions or comments on slide 24? Okay. Slide 25 and 26. So those slides summarize the feedback on the proposal to amend the effective date of IFRS 17 and the expiry date in IFRS 4 for the temporary exemption from applying IFRS 9, so that all entities will be required to apply IFRS 17 and IFRS 9 on 1st January 2022. All agreed with the board decision to defer the effective date of IFRS 17 at least by 1 year. So some insurers said that a deferral of more than 1 year would cost them significant additional implementation cost. In contrast, other insurers fixed a deferral of 2 years to 2023 would further help implementation. Some stakeholders noted that large insurers are at a more advanced stage of implementation compared to the small insurers and suggested setting different effective dates for larger and smaller entities. Regarding the delayed implementation of IFRS 9 for some insurers, there was general agreement that continuing to keep the effective date of IFRS 9 and IFRS 17 aligned, if the board defers the effective date by 1 year, would be beneficial. However, on the possibility of a further deferral of IFRS 9, the feedback was mixed, depending on the jurisdictions. Some insurers noted that they have already implemented IFRS 9, So they see no need to follow the IFRS 9 to maintain the alignment of the effective date with IFRS 17. Others think that the alignment between IFRS 9 and IFRS 17 effective date is essential, even if the board were to decide to defer IFRS 17 by more than 1 year. In general, users of financial statements were concerned about the delay implementation of IFRS 9 for some insurers. Do you have questions or comments on slide 25 and 26?
Roberta, did you just say that there was strong support in relation to the deferral of 1 year when you were introducing slide 25? Yeah,
yes.
But then I think your last comment then was a concern from users, because while you were doing this outreach, we did hear from at the CMAC meeting from one of the users, and this was an unsolicited comment, but it was very vocal about his concern about timeliness in terms of IFRS 17, because he felt that IFRS 17 was one of the most important things that the board had done recently, and that it would enable investment by people into the sector that isn't happening at the moment. So he was very concerned about the delay side of it. So I think that sort of feedback needs to be there as well, because so often what we've got here is feedback from people who are on the preparer side, and because sometimes we don't hear as much from the users, I think we have to remember that they've got some of them at least, have got some strong views about the change that will come when people are using the standard in terms of allowing more investment into the sector, more transparency, more comparability. Thank you.
Okay, we can move to slide 27 and 28. So those slides summarize the feedback on the proposed additional transition relief for contract acquiring a business combination before the transition date, and the risk mitigation activities in place before the transition date. Overall, stakeholders agreed that the proposed relief would be helpful. It is not noted in the slide, but it is worth mentioning that stakeholders also welcome that the board explain that it expects that entities will make estimates in determining IFRS 17 transition amounts, as with any other IFRS standard. And when providing feedback on these specific proposals about transition, some stakeholders continue to raise the same concern that the board has considered when developing the exposure draft regarding the accounting for contract acquiring a business combination after the transition date and the prohibition of applying the risk mitigation option retrospectively. Do you have any question or comment on slide 27 and 28?
No.
Okay, moving to slide 29. The exposure draft also included a question on proposed minor amendments, such as the annual improvements, and a question on whether to make some changes to the terminology in the standard for consistency purposes in finalizing the proposed amendments. It is worth mentioning that some stakeholders consider that the editorial correction in paragraph B107 of IFRS 17 to specify that an entity assesses contract eligible for the variable fee approach at individual contract level is a major change to IFRS 17. This change is not explained in the basis for conclusion on the exposure draft, because it was made only to ensure that the wording in paragraph B101 and paragraph B107 is consistent. However, from the feedback that we gather, it seems that some insurers have started to assess the eligibility of contract for the variable fee approach at group level, rather than at individual contract level as required by IFRS 17. Do you have any questions or comments on slide 29?
Okay. Can I ask one about the point you were just discussing? Apologies, I can't keep it all in memory. Was this editorial correction something that came out of an early TRG discussion?
was not intentionally discussing the TFG, but I think the TFG was asking a question around.
Okay. No, thanks. Thanks.
Was including one of the reporting, but not in this specific.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. So to conclude, UBT outreach stakeholder also provide feedback on topics that the board consider and for which it decided not to propose changes in the exposure draft. The most recurrent topics that are mentioned in slide 31 were the requirement not to change the treatment of accounting estimate made in previous interim financial statement when applying IFRS 17 subsequently, and the annual court requirement. So comments about the interim financial reporting were widespread across jurisdictions, while comments about the annual court were mainly raised by European stakeholders, particularly regarding mutualized contract. In other words, the contract with risk sharing between different generations of policyholders. So more detailed information is included in the comment letters. So the comment letter analysis that we are planning to discuss at the November board meetings will provide more information. So do you have any final comments or just comment on the topics?
Nick?
Thank you. Thank you for the feedback summary. And I've also seen or read quite a few of the comment letters already, and there's clearly some consistent themes which thread their way through both sets of documents. I just wanted to build on the comments that Anne mentioned from our recent CMAC meeting, our consultative forum for users. And there was a sense that it was felt it was important that the board differentiated between two costs. There's clearly a cost to preparers of implementing IFRS 17. I think we've recognised that that's a significant cost. But also against that, a cost, and it was described to the community, of not being able to invest in the sector on a level playing field basis. And that it was felt that cost was a multiple of the implementation cost. And really to remind everyone of the huge opportunity cost for many of not being able to invest in the sector. And just that same encouragement to really get on with this in a timely basis. And I see that today in some of the comment letters, not in all of them, but just that reflection of how important this is.
And of course, the problem here is that the benefit for the insurance industry, which will be tremendous in terms of more accessibility to capital, because the market will become more transparent. But that will only come in a couple of years, and
much more. Now,
so the CEOs in question, they first face the costs, and perhaps their successor will face the benefits. And that's one of the reasons why this is not going as quickly as it might have been. Okay. Mary?
Just thinking about Nick's comment about user views, I don't know, are you planning to do the kind of separate analysis of user feedback, or in light of this being narrow scope, will you just roll the analysis of user comments into the individual issues? Maybe you don't know that.
I think we have received very few letters from the users so far.
I think we were planning of just sort of drawing it out when it's particularly pertinent. Yeah.
Because as you went through these slides, the ones that I thought, okay, Nick, don't hit me, I think the user views are important on everything. But against that background that really cried out to me were slide 21 from the comparability of how CSM is recognized based on how much rigor there is or isn't in terms of when you're identifying other services. 23, the presentation of the statement of financial position and our proposal to provide relief to the portfolio level. And then 27, the business combinations relief. And if we have any views from users about some of the encouragement from preparers to extend that relief further. Those are the three that seem to me to be ones where I'd be particularly interested in hearing separately. any views of users of financial statements that we have on it. And then the other thing, and this is just reflecting back, is I was reminded generally as going through this material of being in the midst of the IFRS 15 narrow scope amendment that followed on the publication of IFRS 15 and the TRG. And in the midst of all that, it felt like the debates were never going to end, that people were always going to come up, you know, with more things, and there were the same tensions between, but you've got to think about this, and we're funding this, and let's just get on with it, and we need certainty about both what the requirements are and the timing are, you know, the timing is. And it's really hard when you're in the middle of that to see how the balance is. But I think if we as an organization can draw on some of that prior experience, that also would be helpful in terms of thinking about ways forward.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's really important that there's obviously a lot of feedback here. It's all got to be considered appropriately. But, you know, what's really important to me is that we just don't lose sight of what your objective is with this particular project. You know, IFRS 17 is out there. These are targeted narrow scope amendments to help with its implementation. And there's, you know, going back to the first comment that you made, Mayor, I think it's just important that we don't get sucked into this project and trying to get involved and try to resolve every implementation question that is out there, because practice can deal with a lot of that, and we just remain disciplined on what we're trying to achieve here. I think it's really important because, you know, as Nick and Anne have highlighted with some of the feedback they heard from CMAQ, just how important it is to get this project, you know, wrapped up so that IFRS 17 can be properly implemented. So I think we just need to remain quite focused and disciplined.
And hopefully everybody's already spending money every day implementing it now, so yeah. We don't want to disrupt that.
Okay, with all these wise words, for us to come to a conclusion for today, and we resume our meeting tomorrow at 9:30.